Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2018, presented by the Remington Trophy, Episode 11.
We honestly look, in my opinion, we look like one of the most undisciplined teams in the country, and it kills me because it isn't like we're not giving them messages. It isn't like we're not trying to hold them accountable. It's up to us as coaches, but it's also up to that team to stop allowing the other stuff to happen. We can't get holding calls on interceptions and then talk trash to their sideline and start dancing on the field. I didn't know what was going on when we're down 13 points and we got backups and reserves dancing on our sideline before kickoffs. They look like they love losing, and they look undisciplined. I'm tired of looking at it that there's really no difference from a coach's perspective between I can't do it and I won't do it. And the people that won't make good decisions, the people that are hitting people 3 yards out of bounds, if that keeps up, I'm just going to ride with the guys that do it the right way. Because we got a lot of warriors on this team that battled today and a lot of ways played well enough to win. But I'm tired of coaching an undisciplined team.
Very undisciplined, and that is why Nebraska is now 0-4 on the season. Good to have you along for one of, if not the most listened to Nebraska Husker podcast in the world. It's the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. Let's bring in a guy who's very disciplined. And if you don't believe me, you got to get to know him on a personal basis. That is the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska. Very impassioned Scott Frost after the loss to Purdue. I got a lot of emails. I got a lot of texts, Rob, saying that's what was missing from a Mike Riley. Mike Riley just seemed not to care at all about losing, or when they did lose. They were just happy to hear some kind of passion from Scott Frost, even in a losing effort.
I'm interested you say that in terms of that you've gotten a lot of the feedback from fans via the email, at least for the Doc Talks email account. Because a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, but I saw, at least on Twitter, I saw a lot of, God, Rob, do you think he's throwing, I mean, how about the coach throwing the players under the bus? I guess I'm not sure I see it that way. I think you got, at some point, as a coach, you got to hold players accountable. It's one of those things where if you've got a coach, and I think Scott did an incredibly good job of this when he was at Central Florida, and I think he's the reason Central Florida is playing some really, really good football right now, is that they got about 2.5 years worth of recruiting classes out of Frost and some incredibly, incredibly good coaching out of him and his staff. But you routinely heard Frost say, hey, we're winning games because of what these players have done. He routinely gave the praise and the credit to the players when they played well and won games. I think good coaches do that. At the same time, you can't step back, and when things are going so god-awfully, blatantly wrong, and you look at it, and there's, at some point, it doesn't matter what the coach says, does, motivates, doesn't motivates, teaches, doesn't teach. At some point, as a player, you got to go out, and you've got to play football. You've got to play mistake-free. You got to stop making the idiotic, completely stupid penalties. I mean, it's not like these penalties. I mean, there were some that got the fans booing. The roughing the passer where, I mean, the guy got hit in the pocket, literally in the act of releasing the football and went down, and they threw a personal foul roughing the passer penalty. That might be one of the most blatantly bad calls I've seen in quite some time. But there was another personal foul where the quarterback threw the ball. Forget the D lineman taking two steps. The quarterback took two full steps after throwing the ball and then got hit. That's idiotic.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Right then and there. A guy, you've got an opponent's, opposing ball player. The guy was a yard and a half out of bounds both feet on the ground, not moving, and got hit. It's moronic, and those are players that ought to be benched.
So let me ask you this. When it comes to discipline like that, everybody, and even Scott Frost said, hey, you know, we can preach all we want, but these guys have to stop doing it. Is that a culture problem or is that a coaching problem? And I mean that, and I'm not trying to pick on Scott Frost, but when
you're
right.
That's a coaching problem. Okay. It was Mike Riley not coaching it for 3 years.
But you can't put that on Mike Riley.
Yeah, you can.
How can you put the lack of discipline on
it? You've got a completely ingrained. You call it what you want, lack of discipline. Not caring, lack of accountability. That went on for 3 years. Guys had no sense of having to do what it takes to be successful at this sport at the University of Nebraska for 3 years. You don't fix that in 4 weeks of worth of a season.
At Monday's news conference, Scott Frost, probably with his most, I would say, blatant toss at Riley and even taking some jabs at players who aren't on board yet.
You know, sometimes you when you're building a new house, you can't build it on a bad foundation or you won't have a house very long. And we had some rot and some termites and some we still do. And we got to get all that cleaned out. You can't build a structure on a foundation that's not solid.
Some rots and some termites.
It's, you know, I've been saying on this podcast and on Twitter that going back to last spring, last winter, I mean, I was flabbergasted at, you know, I shouldn't even say that. I wasn't, actually, you know what? I wasn't flabbergasted last winter when the whole rhabdomyolysis episode happened. That didn't surprise me at all because I'd been told by people at the university that these guys did not have to work out. You had guys who, even the guys who did the bare bones minimum, hey, I'm going to go into the weight room, I'm going to make it look like I'm working out to the coaches and then I'm hitting the showers. Even those guys, the moment the Iowa game ended, hadn't stepped foot near the weight room until Frost started and Zach Duvall started official winter conditioning. When was that, in January?
Yeah, that would have been late January.
So you've got all of December, a week of November, a few weeks in January, basically about 7-8 weeks. We'll say 6-8 to give guys the benefit of the doubt, but basically about 7 or 8 weeks of guys not working out at all. And again, I tell the story over and over again. You contrast that with the throughout most of the 90s, where we would literally almost get in fist fights with the strength coaches because we didn't want to leave the weight room. Where I got into shouting matches with Boyd Epley because I didn't feel like we were working hard enough, and we would leave after our workouts at the stadium, and the offensive linemen would meet at the student rec center to finish lifting weights at 8 o'clock at night. The D-line would go over to Gold's Gym and finish lifting weights there at 8 o'clock at night. Scott is trying to implement a massive culture shift, and I don't think people understand how bad things were under Riley.
Well, I think they're starting to realize now because that's why I think Scott is getting somewhat of a free pass. I've been getting texts from my Iowa friends who say, hey, you know, how's everything going over there? Is that sellout streak in jeopardy? And I said, no, the sellout streak
for the season. They've sold
that's fine.
It's done.
I think people, and I think Husker fans were a little guilty of this. I know Husker media was a lot guilty of this in maybe portraying that things are going to be rosy just because Scott Frost stepped on campus.
Well, and I had a few people on Twitter who asked me over the weekend just about essentially stuff along the lines of, you know, hey, where did all this optimism go? And we got told back in August that this team was better than expected. And I'm like, yeah, 90% of that came from the media. Now, I understand Frost and the coaching staff said a few things. Hey, we're pleasantly surprised by the offensive line. Well, yeah, you're pleasantly surprised because it was a complete disaster all of last year. And the very best player on the entire offensive line quit football because of concussion and other injury problems. And that was Decker. So you've got a line that was pretty sad to begin with and loses their best player in the offseason. You think that line's going to be great this year? You can work out incredibly well. Now, and I think there's and this is something that kind of plagues everybody, myself included. There's a little part of you that subconsciously thinks, hey, even if the team isn't great, the fact that these guys are starting at a Division I university, the fact that they're starting for the University of Nebraska, they've got to be at least pretty good. That's not true.
Not true at all.
No, and this was a group of players that, and again, I talk about this on Twitter. We've talked about it on the podcast last week. Again, this was a team that legitimately, in terms of good, solid, legitimate, uncontested wins last year, really had one. They had an, oh my God, I can't believe they completely pulled that out by the seat of their pants with an immense amount of luck on a last-second drive against Purdue win. You had, what was it, I think a touchdown win over Arkansas State, for God's sakes. Really? Arkansas State? They're not even a very good team in the Sun Belt Conference.
It's interesting that you would bring up...
And they had, what, a 10-point win over Rutgers?
Yeah, and Rutgers is not a good football
team.
They
are a freaking disaster. If you think Nebraska's bad, Rutgers is really bad.
Well, you brought up the wins, and now the big question is, when does Nebraska get its first win? You can hear Dr. Rob on Michael Severe's show on AM 590 ESPN Radio out of Omaha about 11:25, 11:30 every Monday morning. And actually, Michael had a poll up on his Twitter page this morning leaving out the Bethune-Cookman game. What is your guess for the Huskers' first win of the season? 10% say at Wisconsin, 22% say at Northwestern, 29% say home for Minnesota, and 39% say home for Illinois. I actually voted for the home versus Illinois game, but that Minnesota game, I believe, is very winnable.
You know, I told people going into this season, and I'll be the first to admit, I kind of bought into a little bit of the optimism myself.
It's hard not to, right?
It is, but when I say I bought into that optimism, for this season, most people would ask me, hey, what do you think is going to happen? And I told most people, I think if they get 5-7, I'll be ecstatic.
They're not getting that.
3-4, I think, is
doable.
Doable. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I would have hoped Purdue, although
Purdue's improving, but like Scott Frost said after the game, if you're going to put up 31 first downs, if you're going to put up close to 600 total yards, you have to be winning those games. There's no excuse not to win those games.
And that's the thing when I look at Michigan's a little bit of an outlier because – and again, Michigan's not an all-time great team. This is not a team that's going to the playoffs.
Struggled at Northwestern last weekend.
It is. Michigan has no chance of being in the playoff at the end of the year.
I would agree with you on that.
I'm saying that right now.
Well, they lost to Notre Dame. That almost kicked them out.
Dude, Penn State has a loss. Penn State will make the playoffs before Michigan. Just saying. It's Michigan has no chance. They are a very good team. But they've got some good ball. They're a good team. They are a good team. They're not great. They're a good team. They got some NFL guys. We throw that game out. You look at the Purdue game. You look at the Colorado game. You look at the Troy game. All three of those games had these huge statistical anomalies that all said Nebraska should have beat them.
But woulda, coulda, shoulda. That doesn't matter.
They lost the games because of stupidity, because of lack of discipline, because I hate the term buy-in because I think it's an incredibly gray descriptive term.
That's fair.
That covers a huge range of human emotions because I think you got players who they think they're playing hard. They're really not.
They just don't know what that level is.
They have no clue. Now, you know, I heard a great interview, Lincoln Sports Radio. I was down in Lincoln most of the day today. Lincoln Sports Radio, ESPN, Chris Schmidt with Hale Varsity had Charlie McBride on. And McBride, God bless him, I love Coach McBride. And he made a point. He said, you know, some of these guys, when it comes to that whole concept of buying in and playing hard, he said these guys, a guy can think he's playing hard as he can, but he really isn't. And McBride made the point that he said he always told his players and always preached, hey, every single day when you go out to practice, every single game when you go out to play a game, try and get just like 2% better. Pick a couple of really little things. Hey, I'm going to improve on these really little small things, and I'm going to get 2% better. And he said, if you do that, he goes, by the end of the season, it doesn't matter where you start. At the end of the season, you're going to be a hell of a football player. But it's hard to do that. It's hard to go out and fix those little things every
day. Well, it's hard to get better 2% every day if the guy across from you is not getting better by 2% every day, right? Because if you're not pushing each other.
That's a good corollary. I mean, you'd like to when I went out there, I spent my redshirt year going against guys like Mike Kroll, who was a first-round draft pick. Kenny Walker, who was a Pro Bowler for the Denver Broncos. Joe Sims, who is such an incredible athlete at defensive tackle, he went and made a career for himself in the NFL as an offensive tackle. Those were the guys I had to go against every day as a redshirt. Once I got past that redshirt year, it was John Perella. It was Grant Wistrom. It was Jason and Christian Peters, Kevin Raymakers. It was Jamie Lever. It was Dave Noonan. I mean, it was Terry Keneally. Some of these guys who are just absolutely incredible football players who spent a ton of time in the NFL. You don't have that down in Lincoln right now on either side of the ball. It's not like you're going to go out there and see
any kind of dominance.
Well, Cole Conrad going to the NFL is probably not going to happen. But well, on the flip side, I think you look at the defensive side of the ball. I think these guys are reasonably decent, but I don't know if you've got a whole slew of NFL guys on that side of the ball either right now.
Let's take a break from the football to talk about the Remington Trophy presentation that's coming up January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. This is Nebraska's premier football banquet event. There is nothing better in the state of Nebraska than the Remington Trophy presentation. In fact, I've been to the Heisman Trophy presentation, which is pretty cool in New York City. I don't think it's as good as a show, and I don't think it's as good as a banquet as the Remington Trophy presentation. Take it from me. I've been to the Outland Trophy presentation. Definitely doesn't even come close to what the Remington Trophy presentation is. So for your ticket opportunities, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. That's RemingtonTrophy.com. It's January 12, 2019. 6:30 is cocktail hour. 7:30 is the program. Now, I have been told by Dave Remington who the special guest speaker is going to be, and I've been kind of tipped off by Dave who the Ford Legends Award winner is going to be. I cannot tell you yet, but I'm telling you right now.
The sad thing? You don't even tell me.
I have not even told Rob yet, and that's a true story. So I just cannot wait. Maybe it's next week or the week after to make this announcement, but I'm going to give you some piece of advice. Buy your tickets in advance right now at RemingtonTrophy.com. And, of course, the proceeds from the Remington Trophy Banquet benefit the Boomer Esiason Foundation in the fight against cystic fibrosis. Time now for this week's Remington Trophy Spotlight. We go into the watch list to take a look at a center across the nation who is exceeding and excelling at the center position and who is on the Remington Trophy watch list. Rob, this guy's kind of flown under our radar, and we're going out to Eugene, Oregon, where center Jake Hansen is in his third year. He's a redshirt junior.
Third year as a starter.
As a starter. He started 12 games as a freshman, 13 games as a sophomore. He's started all the games now as a junior. He has started 30 consecutive games. And the weird thing about him is, and you've talked about it, for his size, he's kind of big. He's 6'5", 297.
He's not your prototypical. And yeah, you've got a guy, again, 6'5", little over 300 pounds. And he did. He came out of high school as a tackle. This is a guy who is a classic tackle. But again, you know, one of the things we've talked about on the show consistently, offensive line coaches absolutely love They love to take their best guy and make him the center. Now, and again, everybody thinks left tackle. The best guys almost always end up at center. And it's the same thing with this guy. Heck of a ball player. And it's, you know, as both a redshirt freshman and a sophomore, he was honorable mention all Pac-12. Now, that sounds like not much because you figure, well, they got a first team, second team, and third team all Pac-12. Actually, first team and second team all Pac-12. And then honorable mention. You look at some of the centers, though, that have come out of that conference. Every year, USC sends a guy to the NFL at that position pretty much. If you're the honorable mention all Pac-12 center, you're actually a pretty darn good football player. And I hate to admit that coming from a place like Nebraska, that a conference where I think the lineman's primary source of protein is avocados.
Well, he did not allow a sack all of last season on his quarterback. Oregon off to a 4-1 start this year. The only loss coming to then number 7 Stanford, 38-31 in overtime. They beat California last weekend, 42-24. So keep an eye on Jake Hansen, a guy maybe flying under the radar right now. If not this year, then next year could definitely be one of the favorites
Trophy. It is, and I'm kind of trying to figure out where to put this guy. I kind of have a top 5 list, and he was not on it. And I'm kind of struggling here a little bit because I kind of want to slide him in there. It's sort of like at 4.5 right now.
That means that we are drinking a beer. Drink a beer, everybody.
All right, we are now drinking
Dude,
a beer.
You brought it back.
I brought it back.
I love it.
Yes.
I've been waiting. I wasn't going to suggest it, but I'm glad you brought it back.
The Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer sponsor and beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Of course, we drink Infusion Brewing Company beer each and every week here on the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Don't forget the Infusion Brewing Company's 2 locations, one in the Benson area of the Omaha, in Omaha, right off Maple. And then the tap room and brewing operation in Southwest Omaha. If you want to know the exact addresses, go to infusionbrewing.com. Tonight, we're drinking a brand new one. We try to drink the freshest stuff that Infusion Brewing has. And I'm going to tell you, I was a little hesitant when they wrote me today. They said, hey, Trav, why don't you try the 2018 Wet Hop, that's W-E-T, Hop Pale Ale. I was like, you know,
It sounds moist.
It does. And this is made of Chinook Wet Hops from the Midwest hop producers. So this is local hops. And that also makes me go, I don't know. It's kind of like local wine.
It's like drinking Nebraska wine.
Yeah, and so they use 30 pounds in each batch here. It's 5.5 alcohol by volume, only a 38 IPU, so it's not very bitter. And Rob,
this is a very good everyday throat in the garage.
Absolutely. It's got a little floral taste, a little citrus on the back end, and maybe it's because I was expecting the absolute worst that it's better, but I'm like, oh, this is good. I'm almost bummed it's going into wintertime because I like if they would have had this like in July, I'd have been drinking this stuff left and right.
Well, I'm not going to not.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, well, but yeah, when you hear about it, it's a pale ale.
Yeah.
You hear about the volume of hops they put into it. Very drinkable. Again, I kind of compared a lot of the pale ales or the IPAs. Sometimes you always got to worry a little bit. I always call them the salsa contest beers. There's always the one guy who dumps a bottle of capsaicin into the salsa. He doesn't care if it tastes good or not. He just wants to send somebody to the hospital. Same thing with IPAs or not even an IPA, just a flat out pale ale. A lot of times the brewers just, they want to make it so bitter, it's almost undrinkable just so they can say they got it. They got that IBU number as high as they could freaking get it.
Yeah, this isn't the case.
This is not the case. This is actually, it's a great beer. It's very smooth. It's a great everyday beer. But it's got some complexity to it. It's got a little bitterness. It's got that smoothness. It's got a little citrus aspect to it. It's not pineapple-y, so my cousin in Columbus, Matt, who's he's like one of I found a second one. I don't know if you follow me on Twitter. I got two Columbus, Ohio Husker fans following the Doc Talk
Twitter page.
The Twitter page now. So I'll take all the Husker fans out of Columbus. But anyway, my cousin Matt in Columbus, he absolutely hammers me anytime we talk about pineapple-y beer, or as you love to phrase it, yummy beer. So it's got a little citrus aspect. Citrus is not pineapple-y, and it's not yummy.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is in my top five of all the infusion beers.
I would be more than willing.
I know it's hard, but God, you and I have a different palate.
Even the stout last week was pretty freaking good.
But
we haven't done Loose Morals yet.
And I don't think they're doing Loose Morals this year.
I know you told me you didn't think they were going to do it.
I think it might have been a legal restriction or something. I'm joking there. It's just.
Yeah, but I think the podcast last year scared me. The fact that you had one glass and I killed the rest of the growler, neither of us remembers that night.
Infusionbrewing.com. That's infusionbrewing.com. Tweet at him, email him, do whatever you have to do, and say, hey, we heard about your beer on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.
We're not giving up on anybody, but if there's somebody that we trust to go out there and at least not get us beat, I'm going to let him go out there and have a chance to make plays.
And Scott Frost proved that today as the depth chart has been shuffled, should we say, for the upcoming game against Wisconsin. Your thoughts on the changes on the depth chart?
I thought they were all very appropriate.
Does Lamar Jackson ever play again?
Kid's soft. And when I say that, I mean mentally. This is like third-hand information. But it's one of those, I know a guy who knows a guy who talked to one of Riley's GAs who specifically said, hey, when I left Nebraska, I knew Lamar Jackson was going to be a problem for Frost's staff. And when I say a problem, just in a massive talent. The kid's got all the talent in the world. This is a kid who neither coaching staff was ever able to really push his buttons and get him to perform. It's not like he was this all-world performer under Riley either.
So that makes Eric Lee the number one cornerback now.
Yeah, and I've never had a lot of faith in Lamar Jackson on the field. On paper, guy looks like he'd be a world beater. You look at his chops coming out of high school. He's mentally and emotionally soft. I would not be surprised if he transfers. I don't know what kind of eligibility status he has. I haven't even looked at that yet. But,
well, since they've only played four games, you can technically.
Yeah, he could still redshirt.
He could still redshirt.
Transfer and redshirt. But,
which I don't like that. That's a violation of the spirit of the rule, by the way. As Mark Farley, the head coach of Northern Iowa, told me, it's one of the unintended consequences of the redshirt rule.
It is, and I get that, but I think it'll kind of shake itself out. You're going to find every year there's going to be a handful of guys. You look at Clemson, every year there's going to be a handful of guys who shake things up by getting two, three games into the season and transferring. It's going to happen. So here's how I feel about it when you look at that, when you look at that situation. And again, I say this in terms of, hey, how much talent did we actually have in Lincoln? And how good were these guys that Riley brought in? And what was the actual state of affairs down there at the university? Look at it this way. When Frost hit the door, you had guys like Nick Gates who kind of took a look around and basically said, hey, I'm going to have to seriously bust my ass here to be able to keep playing and keep starting. I'm going to have to do things I've never had to do before from an effort standpoint. He was in a situation where he would rather turn pro than stay on the team. And here's the thing. It's not like he was rated as a really high draft prospect. It's not like his draft grade came back as, oh yeah, this guy's a surefire late second, early third round pick. He was kind of a sketchy, maybe sixth rounder, might be a free agent. Guess what? He didn't even get drafted. He signed as a free agent, I'm disappointed to say, with my New York Giants, who are sitting at 1-3. I call it the Gates effect. but you got a guy there who, and there was a couple of other guys who did the same thing. There were guys who, when Frost hit the door and people saw what the potential culture change was going to be from a work ethic standpoint, from an effort standpoint, from a buy-in standpoint, basically said, there's no way I'm going to be able to keep up with this. I'd have to actually work hard for once.
Goes back to the culture we talked about at the beginning.
Yeah, I did. And these guys bailed. And it's the same thing with these guys. If you want to say there's a lack of buy-in, I don't know if there's a lack of buy-in per se as much as there is. There's a lack of understanding of what you have to do as a football player to succeed. And there's a very fine line between some of these guys who are 3-, 4-, 5-star athletes at a school like Nebraska and a 3- or 4-star athlete at a school like Alabama. It's an incredibly fine line, and it comes down to effort and attitude, culture. That's what, when everybody talks about culture, that's what it's that difference between saying, hey, I don't know who the head coach is going to be. We just got trounced by Iowa in the third quarter, put up 28 unanswered on us, and I'm not going to actually, I don't have to step foot back in the stadium until the start of winter conditioning 8 weeks from now. But guess what? I'm going to freaking live in that weight room absolutely killing myself until that day comes, versus I'm going to sit back and eat crisp meat burritos at Downtown Amigos in Lincoln for 8 weeks and not work out. So everybody did the latter.
And other changes, walk-on Cade Warner takes the lead spot at receiver. He made his first career start Saturday. Carlos Davis, now a first-string nose tackle. Tanner Farmer, your first-string center.
I like the Farmer Bo Wilson move. I thought that was something I kind of wanted to see that from the get-go. When I first heard about Farmer taking snaps at center, I thought he was a better center than he was a guard.
We actually got a lot of emails about that during the week, because now people are just emailing us all times of the day and every day of the week, but they would have liked to see Farmer at the center spot.
That was something I really wanted to see. Now, I, to my understanding, I was told he was ill going into the game, and so very limited playing time, and you had Bo Wilson in there at the right guard spot for much of the game regardless. I've kind of wanted to see Bo. He's one of those guys that I thought really should have been out there potentially from the start, and I thought they should have just flat out moved Farmer to center from at the start of the year. Now, and again, I'm second guessing guys who get paid to coach football. They see some things I don't, but at least from a fan standpoint, from a former player standpoint, from what I've seen, it seemed like the productivity of those players would have been better than what we saw with Cole Conrad out there. I thought Conrad did his best work as a backup offensive tackle, quite frankly.
Well, Scott Frost makes the moves on the depth chart, and it must motivate guys all around because he liked what the way the week started off.
I can see a change now. I saw some guys practicing hard today that I haven't ever seen practice with that kind of energy. But I told them after practice, what took you so long to practice like that? Because that's what it takes. And I think some of them are finally getting it. So hopefully we're taking more steps in the right direction. I've said all along, if we're getting better day by day, inevitably you're going to end up where you want.
That's the 2% that Charlie McBride was talking about. But when you make the switches on the depth chart and you start saying, hey, I'm taking your job away, does that motivate you in practice? It must have worked this morning or at Monday's practice.
It depends on the player. I mean, it sounds like he's getting some results that he wants to see. Now, I'm assuming somebody who didn't see their job get taken away went, holy shit, maybe I need to step it up too. You need to see that across the board. It can't just be, okay, you got Lamar Jackson who's not performing, so you're going to throw Lee in there instead. It's got to be the guy. I mean, you've got to have Farniok at right tackle going, holy shit, they're benching guys here and there. Maybe I should step it up a little bit. The thing is, though, you got to have those guys stepping it up without that happening. And that's when we talk about the culture. That's part of that definition of culture. Somebody saying, hey, maybe I think I'm working as hard as I can. I'm going to go and try and find just a little bit more at practice today. Maybe I think I'm playing as hard as I can. I'm going to find a little bit more during the game today.
Well, you've brought up a good point on this podcast for several years now, and that is how maybe each and every one of your teammates pushed you more than the coaches did. You knew what the level of expectations from the coaches was, but it was maybe the internal battles that you did with your own teammates.
I don't even – see, here's the thing. When I was down there, the teammate pressure was decidedly there, and it was massive, and it was large. It was almost overbearing.
So maybe
– but hold on. It wasn't as – powerful, that's maybe the best word I've got, as that pressure we put on ourselves. Imagine you've got this insane
isn't that kind of the same thing? They're just kind of intertwined.
They are intertwined, but I mean, it's not like I was sitting there going, look at Stye, look at Uyghur, look at Joel Wilkes.
No, because you were high performers.
Yeah, look at Aaron Grant. Look at the guys behind us. I mean, we had to sit there, and you had guys like Chris Dishman, who is a 10-year NFL guy, right behind me on the depth chart. Guess who was behind Chris? Adam True, who is a 10-year NFL guy behind him on
the
depth chart.
That's because you had high performance.
It was constant. You had that pressure, and so you did. You had that pressure coming from the other guys. You know what, though? I never sat there and thought to myself, hey, I can't let Wilkes down next to me because, God, he's putting all that pressure. I mean, look at this guy who came out of Hastings, Nebraska, who's busting his ass every day, fighting and scratching and clawing, and he's the starting left guard. I need to step it up because of Joel. It's not like I looked at it like that. I mean, you had that pressure. That pressure definitely existed. I was sitting there looking at myself going, oh, my God. I need to scratch and claw and fight, and I need to perform. I need to step it up. I need to find that next gear. And you had that thought about finding, like I said, about what McBride said. It's a great quote. That was a constant down there, but it existed within our own minds and within our own philosophies. It wasn't just the pressure from the guy next to us. You got to understand how powerful it was coming from ourselves as also. But it is. It's an intertwined thing. And the two of those things together, that pressure from the guys next to you, that pressure you had on yourself, it was incredibly powerful. And there's right now, I don't think these guys have remotely, I shouldn't say remote, I think they've got a very poor understanding of that.
I had four captains come into my office yesterday on their day off to talk about what needed to be done to get it fixed. I think the guys get it. And that's all part of building the foundation I talked about. Sometimes it doesn't matter how much the coach says it. If it doesn't come from in the locker room, there's not a lot of power to it.
Thoughts on that?
I like hearing that. Now, I think when you look at the captains, you've got some guys there that I think are – you've got some solid ball players. They're not great. I hate to say it. It's not like I look at these guys and think – I love Gerald Foster. He's a Lincoln kid. The guy's busting his ass. He was the guy who originally had that comment about he does not want his senior season to go down as nothing other than just a transition year. And I've got a massive amount of respect for that. And I say this again, all due respect, he's not the second coming of Will Shields. He's not another Brendan Stye. He's not another Joel Wilkes who's going to kick the shit out of the rock all day long on a field down in Miami. He's just not. He's a very good ball player. He's got a massive heart and a lot of pride, and I want to see him perform well.
Time to take another break.
But I'm not done yet.
Damn, you had me that long pause. You gave me the long pause. You stared at me gazingly, and I'm like, take a break.
But Foster's a kid who I think he understands that he wants these guys to perform. He wants to find that 2%. And I think he understands that. It's going to be difficult to get 22 other guys to rally around that, though.
Can I take a break now?
I suppose.
Thank you, Sir Rob. Or Dr. Rob. Time now to take a break from the Husker football talk to tell you about a couple of our sponsors. First would be Husker Hounds at huskerhounds.com and also three locations in the Omaha area. If you haven't stopped in to introduce yourself to Scotty yet, you're missing out on one of the best fan experiences you could ever have. I'd recommend the 84th and Center store. That's like the superstore, but all the stores are great. But Scotty's always hanging out. He's the smiley redhead who you can't miss, and he's got all the Husker gear that you need. You need to be dressed properly for Husker football games, for Husker basketball games, for any Husker event. And the seasonal stuff is coming up too. Hell, you probably need a Halloween costume if you want to go as Scott Frost or Herbie Husker or a little red. I'm sure
dude,
Scott can help you out.
Great stuff. Basketball season's coming.
Yeah,
up.
I know. Great stuff's become a big seller. I know people don't want to hear that on this podcast, but it's true. Huskerhounds.com. Well,
this side of the Platte River. Get out the rest of the state of Nebraska. Nobody cares.
Huskerhounds.com. Of course, when you want to go to Big Red events, Husker football games, Husker volleyball games, Husker basketball games, Ticket Express is where you find your tickets. In fact, you can get tickets to almost any event, or how about this, all events all across the country. My son attends the University of Kansas. I made an inquiry about going to see the Kansas Jayhawks last week as they played Oklahoma State. Just called Jessica up, called Chad up, said, hey, I'm going down there. What are you seeing? And I said, I'm not paying that for Kansas football. I did. I'm like, nah, I'll just hang out in the parking lot and drink beer with a bunch of the Jayhawk
fans.
Okay,
I saw the photos on social media of you inside the stadium.
Yeah, I was. Because you know why? Honest to God, you can almost go for free if you just show up. I know one guy who was ahead of me. It went through the metal detector. They said, you got a ticket? They're like, no. All right, go on in.
You know what, though? In general, I would highly recommend give Chad or Jessica
yes.
a call.
Absolutely.
Get their tickets. Hey, Nebraska volleyball crushed Illinois
this weekend. And don't forget this. And this happened when we did a summer podcast. We talked about them selling Hamilton tickets in Des Moines. Rob, you're a big supporter of the Omaha Performing Arts.
Love it.
Yeah. And matter of fact, I went to the Bill Murray show last night at the Holland Center.
How was it?
That was excellent.
Bill, I can't say it, Murray.
Yes, and Jan Vogler. I mean, you got one of the premier cellists, and then you have Bill Murray.
Who cares about the cellist?
Cool because the music behind Bill Murray reading Hemingway, reading Walt Whitman, reading Mark Twain was just – and then he busted out the song of Van Morrison. It was just so surreal. It was so cool. I liked it a lot. So if you want tickets to the Holland Center,
the arts,
Chad and Ticket Express can help you out there. Go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. Of course, you probably found this podcast because you are on Husker Max. We want to thank Husker Max, who really, since the beginning of this podcast, has been a distributor of the podcast, help reach as many people as possible. 24/7, 365 Husker news all the time at HuskerMax.com. Of course, this week you're going to be reading a lot about the University of Wisconsin. The Badgers with one loss on the season, lost at home to BYU. They were off last week after coming off the come-from-behind win over Iowa. That was a knockdown, drag-out football game. And if Iowa doesn't turn the ball over three times and
Iowa
one...
Iowa wins that
Iowa
game.
Wins that game and probably no, wins it by
Noah
10 points.
Fant, who I wish was in Lincoln, went off a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, but you're talking probably about the two best teams in the West right there. But now the Big Ten Championship, at least in the West division, goes through Madison, Wisconsin. I've watched Wisconsin play twice this year already. It would take a miracle for Nebraska to beat Wisconsin.
I would agree with that.
And that's not being...
I mentioned this, the Hale Varsity interview with Charlie McBride.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about that game a little bit. In McBride's commentary, he said you've got arguably the least disciplined team in the Big Ten going up to play arguably the most disciplined team in the Big Ten. Wisconsin is an incredibly, incredibly disciplined team. They don't turn the ball over. I mean, they do. But
well, Hornibrook will make mistakes. Hornibrook will make mistakes.
You know
the quarterback.
What? Yeah, he made less than Iowa's quarterback.
Yeah, it wasn't Iowa. Nate Stanley did fine. It was their special teams that ruined him. They had a fumble on a punt return.
I'll give you that, but I mean, Hornibrook, this season at least now, again, the BYU game, I still haven't quite wrapped my head.
Neither have I.
Because I'm not sure if that one, it's one of those, Jesus, Wisconsin human? Is BYU actually, BYU looked atrocious against against Washington. Washington just destroyed them. And so I can't, I haven't yet figured out BYU. I can't figure out Wisconsin yet either, though, because of that BYU loss. And I think they're probably, I think they're a very good team. I think the BYU loss was maybe a little bit of a fluke. The thing with Hornibrook, though, is that for the first time, I'm actually seeing him making plays as opposed to being nothing other than a, hey, don't turn it over and just manage the game and we'll be fine, to the point now where I'm actually seeing the guy throwing the ball and making plays as an actual quarterback.
And he did that against, I think he was 22 or 25 against Iowa, and in that win in Iowa City. What I'm anxious to see here, Rob, is the Nebraska offense that is putting up yards against a really good Wisconsin defense.
Whew, that's going to be tough.
But it's kind of a measuring stick, right? I'm going to say you at least get to measure where your offense is against a really good defense.
I'll give you that. I thought there was a lot of Michigan's pretty damn good defense. Again, yeah. I've commented multiple times, number of NFL guys they have. I don't know if Wisconsin has that, has the same degree of just pure sheer talent that Michigan has. And again, don't, I'm not saying I'm elevating Michigan to this unattainable pedestal. I'm not. But they've got some really good ball players on that defense. Wisconsin is, they play great team defense. They don't make mistakes. Guys mind their gap. Guys are always in position. They don't make mistakes. And if you make a mistake at all, they're going to be all over. They're going to get that turnover. They're going to get that tackle in the backfield. They're going to get that stop on third and short. They're going to get that stop on fourth and short. They play very, very good team defense. I'll be interested to see how it goes because, again, I think Nebraska, when they're not when these guys, you look at Nebraska's offensive line, when they're not lining up against a group of NFL-caliber ball players, they can hang in there with you if they don't make mistakes. And I thought they did a pretty good job against Purdue. Running game was productive. The passing game wasn't horrible. I thought Martinez actually had reasonable time most plays in the pocket. Again, he helps himself with his feet quite a bit, but it wasn't just the utter disaster you saw against Michigan. And so if they can keep Martinez, give him a little bit of protection, give him a little bit of time, and if they can give Azigbo the holes to get...
If Azigbo goes for more than 100, they're in this game.
You know, shit, I was gonna, you could say if Azigbo... This is, I can't even talk. If Azigbo goes for more than 100 against Purdue, they're definitely in the game. And again, they shot themselves in the foot, and Azigbo went for almost 200. So... I don't think you can say that with their degree of lack of discipline. Yeah, if Azigbo goes for more than 100 and they play with more discipline than they've had, yeah, they'll be in this game.
All right, we're going to switch gears now to the fan question comments. Of course, we've got lots of questions all week long.
Best part of the
podcast. Well, you know, the interesting part is we're going to get to the point where we have so many questions, I'm not going to be able to get to them all because it would literally take another hour, and we've talked almost 50 minutes the way it is. This first question comes from Mark. From a recruiting standpoint, Dr. Rob, what's worse, the current culture of the team or the culture of the fan base who's apparently unable to trust the process and accept the season for what it is?
Well, I would say the culture of the team's the worst part because it's a freaking disaster. I don't think you want to know the weirdest thing about that game. So I had I call it a bitter end game,
yeah,
this weekend, in the fact that I was my wife and two daughters went to the game. Now, two tickets, different spots. So I was sitting with my oldest daughter up in the north end zone. We stayed to the bitter end. So I always call those bitter end games. Not a lot of people left. I mean, For a team that was down by a couple of scores at the very end of the game, Kirk, there were still probably about 60,000, maybe 70,000 people still in the damn stadium at that point, like at the very end. That's mind-blowing to me, because what it says is I think that there's a lot of fans who actually, they kind of, they care, and they've got a degree of understanding of the process. They understand this shit's going to be ugly, and it's going to be ugly for a little while. This is not going to be something that, hey, by the time we play Illinois, everything's going to be great. I think the fans get that. I really think they have an understanding of that. And if they don't, they should, and they better get an understanding of that pretty quick, because guess what? Things aren't going to be fixed by Illinois. Now, things may not be fixed by middle of next season. Ooh. You talk to any former player, and most of them are going to tell you this is going to be a 2 to 3 year process. And a lot of that is based upon the fact that Frost told us this is going to be a 2 to 3 year process.
That kind of leads us into the next question from Brian, who says, "Hi, Rob. Brian here, fellow trumpet player from Calvert Elementary."
Nice. That's going back a few years. I know Brian.
He says he just discovered the podcast. Love it. So much depth, zero BS. Thank you to both. I think there's a lot of BS on here, but it's always about beer or something else.
That's true.
My question is about reasonable expectations. If rebuilding succeeds, how many seasons are the Huskers away from key milestones, such as first win, winning season, top 25 finish, a Big Ten West Division title?
All right. So Brian from 46th and Bancroft in Lincoln, home of the Calvert Comets.
There you go. Oh, I like the name of the Comets.
It was a good one. I think that popped up my...
It's probably, not offensive.
Yeah, it wasn't. Right around third grade. So, yeah. Well, what else are you going to be if you're from Calvert with a C?
Cows. Go to South Park.
Yeah, that would have worked. That would have worked. Yeah, first win's going to be this year. I truly think I think they're a 3 to 4 win team this year. Wouldn't you guess what they were last year? 3 to 4 win team. So it's not like we're that far off from last year, and that actually that's a compliment given the fact that you've got massive system and cultural change going on.
Winning season.
Winning season, 3 seasons. I don't think it happens next year. I say that's year 3.
Top 25 finish.
That's year 4 to 5.
Big Ten West Division title.
In that 4 to 5. I think once they get past year 3, I think things start moving at a reasonable clip. And when I say reasonable clip, I think once you get past year 3, you're going to see a point where all of a sudden – They're competing for that Big Ten West title. After you get past year 3, you start knocking off Iowa. You start pushing Wisconsin. You start beating Wisconsin. I think you actually start putting a little bit of pressure. You start having those Peach Bowl Auburn games against Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State in the Big Ten title game.
Tim says, so it's the third quarter of the Purdue game. As I write this, it's 27-7. Just happened. And now we have people just writing us during the game.
They're like, I'm not even waiting till Sunday.
I think he just wants your feeling here. Carlos Davis just made a tackle for loss. There's no celebration. No teammates high-five him. There's no acknowledgement. It's like this all game and was like that most time last year. Tackle for loss is no small feat. On a decent day, you see a couple handfuls of them a game. Your games are not plentiful. Your TFL are not many. How bad does the overall team attitude have to be with no enthusiasm while playing?
It's pretty bad. But
that's more of a defensive. You brought up the throw the bones, right? I mean, offensive guys don't spend a lot of time celebrating a big play.
That's because at least on the offensive line, we're kicking the crap out of somebody 99% of the time. I hear where he's coming from. And again, I think it's just that, again, it's that lack of culture. It's that lack of understanding of what you've got to do. You know, the one guy, and I think if you go to a game and you watch the game and you talk to fans, the one guy who's out there who I think really exhibits that degree of, you know, just giving a damn about things is Mo Berry. And he's having a great season. This is a guy who I think has as legitimate a shot to make it to the next level of, as anybody on that defense. But I think he legitimately cares. I saw this going back to last year. It's not that he cares about playing for Coach Riley. It's not that he cares about playing for Coach Frost. Barry cares about playing football. The guy loves the game of football. The guy wants to light people up. The guy wants to make hits. The guy wants to have fun. He wants to go 100 miles per hour on every single play. And he's trying to set an example. And the most disappointing thing is that I'm not seeing 10 other guys following him. You know, I shouldn't say that. DiCaprio Boodle's impressing the hell out of me this year, actually. I think he's a guy who's going to be a next level player. I really do. He's got a couple things he needs to clean up. He had one. You know what? The thing I like about Boodle is that he had an ugly He had a kind of ugly pass interference earlier in the game. Southeast corner in the end zone. He was just completely face guarding the wide receiver. And it was one of those things, the wide receiver turned at the last minute to catch the ball. And I don't think Boodle had the time to think, oh crap, the ball's coming, I got to get my head turned around. He basically just planted his face in the guy's chest, took him down to the turf. Pass was incomplete, but it was a pretty obvious pass interference penalty because he was face guarding the guy. Rest going to throw the flag on that every time. He fixed it. They had a few drives later, same kind of pass, corner of the end zone, southeast corner of the stadium. Boodle has his face buried in the receiver's chest. Right as the receiver looks up, puts his arms up for the ball, Boodle gets his head around, gets his arms around, defends the pass, and again, ton of contact takes the guy down. Ref doesn't throw a flag because it wasn't pass interference. Boodle did what he needed to do to essentially show that he was going for the ball. But there's a few guys. I mean, you look at Mo Berry, you look at DiCaprio. These guys are out there. They're trying. They're playing hard. They're playing good football. You just need another 8-9 guys to fall in step behind them.
James writes in, says, after watching the game on Saturday and listening to Scott Frost's post-game press conference, it appears that there are some higher-profile recruits that look like they are not accepting the fact that the staff is not going to treat them differently. And by differently, I mean coddled. And they are trying to prove something. Just a thought that I had. I would love to hear your thoughts. Second question, Divine Ozigbo always seems to be a forgotten man year in and year out, and by the end of the year, he always seems that he's the best running back on the team. Maybe not the most talented, but definitely one that does everything the right way. He looked fast, hit the holes with decisive action. I feel he will be the best option the rest of the year. Your thoughts?
Well, let's go with Divine first. You know, that the whole time under Riley, I always wondered, what the hell did this guy do to get into Riley's doghouse? I mean, you got the nicest human being on the planet in Mike Riley. You win a game, they do hip, hip, hoorays. You get the ever-loving shit lambasted out of you. And, well, he was still doing hip, hip, hoorays for that even. Didn't matter who won. You were getting a hip, hip, hooray out of Mike Riley. Everything's awesome. And then you got Divine Ozigbo in the freaking doghouse. I never could understand why this guy was not the feature back under Mike Riley. I just could not wrap my head around it. The guy has always seemed to be just productive. I mean, that's the best word I got for him. He's a good productive back. He always falls forward. He plays hard. He hits the hole. He puts the hit on the defender. I never understood that. And the thing that I really liked about him as well, too, is that you got a guy that when it comes to running backs amongst all the running backs on the roster, from a size, height, weight, strength, skill set standpoint, probably fits Frost's offense the least. He just doesn't. I mean, this is kind of a big, strong power back. And Frost doesn't, he doesn't run the old school I formation, power I type offense from 1984. That's just not his style. But this guy did everything he could to turn himself into the guy that fits Frost's system. He actually ended up gaining weight this past offseason. That's what's mind-blowing.
But he looks trimmer.
He does, because I think the guy literally lost every ounce of body fat on his body. I mean, it's just the guy looks amazing. I hate the fact that I'm looking at another guy and saying, that guy looks amazing. But he does. The guy put in the time. He decided, hey, I got 1 year under Frost. I'm going to do everything I can to fit into his system, and he bought in. I hope they completely ride him for yardage the rest of the season, because I think they're going to get it out of him. Reread the first question to me real quick.
I deleted it. I know. Sorry.
Sorry, the moist hops are getting here.
I'm going to abbreviate the question from Jason in Memphis, and I believe that's Memphis, Nebraska. Dr. Rob, can I get your diagnosis on the O-line?
Boy, they're trying hard.
I mean, you put up 600 yards of offense.
Yeah, I think they did a lot better. I thought there was a big shift from what you saw against Michigan, where you saw one or two guys breaking down. Maybe two out of three plays. You had three, maybe four out of the five guys blocking really well on every single play, but that one breakdown would get you. And sometimes it was that right tackle, sometimes left tackle, sometimes tight end. I kind of throw those guys in there when it's a run play and they're or even a pass play and those guys are blocking. Sometimes it was the guard spot, sometimes the center spot. But I mean, you saw that undisciplined periodic breakdowns that allowed defenders into the backfield. I thought these guys took a little bit of a step forward. Again, I will say this again: Purdue's defensive line nowhere near as good as Michigan's. It's a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison, but I thought they stepped up and played a hell of a lot better. I thought they kind of went back to the productivity you saw against Colorado, the productivity, the 24 first downs you saw from the Troy game. And they put up, again, almost, you know, even against a crappy football team, you put up shy of 600 yards of total offense. You're doing okay. I would have liked to have seen more points, but again, some of the idiotic penalties and the turnovers killed them.
If we didn't get to your questions this week, we apologize. There's really almost so much time, and Rob has had a lot of wet hops this evening.
Moist, wet hops,
and you can tell the speech is getting a little slurred. That means he's going to have to sober up in my basement for another 40 minutes.
Infusion's the only place that can take moist hops and make a beer this good.
But I will say this. Jeff gets the last word. He says it's not really so much a question as it is a comment.
Where's Jeff from?
Jeff's from Omaha.
Nice.
And he would like to point out that that Dave Remington is to blame for the 0-4 start. Dave Remington has not allowed us to say the F word this year, and therefore Nebraska is 0-4.
If I was dropping F bombs, then we would win games.
So, Dave, if they lose to Wisconsin next week, you have to let Dr. Rob drop one or two F bombs, and that may get him in the win column.
Just see, I'm so used to I've stopped dropping F bombs in everyday conversation now.
It's like I've totally dropped the F bomb from my vocabulary. So but Jeff just wanted to point that out, that hey, there's a reason Nebraska's losing. It's because Dr. Rob's not swearing as much. There you go.
Yeah, although if Nebraska's winning games, I'm not swearing that much.
That's true. Of course, if you want to hear what Dr. Rob has to say during the week, the best place to do that would be Twitter, at DocTalkSports. That's at DocTalkSports on Twitter. You can email us all week long. People are wondering, where does the email go? It goes to me because, well, Dr. Rob has... Well, I'm not saying my day job isn't important. It is, but Dr. Rob, like, puts people to sleep and has to worry about, you know, the health and well-being of people. Yeah. So I'm not going to burden him with all the emails that come in during the week. but I filter them and I read them, and if there's a really good one, I might even forward them to him. So doctalksports@gmail.com. It's doctalksports@gmail.com. Make sure to leave a comment in the Podbean section. If you're listening on iTunes, leave us a review. Whether it's positive, negative, we would love the reviews on iTunes, because what happens is if you leave a review, more people may be exposed to the podcast. For Dr. Rob Zadiskon, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.